Welcome to the Pictures of Lily podcast, Vintage Edition. I'm your host, Lily Moayeri. I have been a music journalist since 1992, and I interview a lot of music-related people. Originally, this podcast was about my experience behind the story, what my experience was doing the interviews, just to give you a snapshot of what it's like on the other side of the digital recorder. Since 2024, we've shifted to the Pictures of Lily podcast Vintage Edition format, where I'm sharing my experiences about specific interviews with the bonus of original audio from the artists in those interviews. These interviews pull from my 34-year archive, many of which are recorded on cassette tape. Pictures of Lily. Thank you, everyone, for tuning into the Pictures of Lily podcast Vintage Edition. This is Year 7, Episode 111. We publish monthly with a new episode posting on the second Wednesday of each month. You can find us on every platform by going to picturesoflily.com, where you can subscribe or follow us and also connect to us on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, Pandora, Amazon, and Audible. Although it's really best to listen to the podcast straight from the source at picturesoflily.com, as it is the highest quality audio and avoids copyright restrictions. This episode is my second interview with Coldplay's Chris Martin in 2002. Lights go out and I can't be saved. Tides that I tried to swim against. Put me down upon my knees. Oh, I beg and please. Here are a few snapshots of the second time I interviewed Chris Martin of Coldplay. You might remember I interviewed Chris for Coldplay's debut album, Parachutes, before their single Yellow made them superstars. I shared that interview in episode 87 of this podcast. It's quite a contrast to the second interview with Chris, and I recommend checking out that first interview either before or after listening to this one. I will link it in this episode's notes. This interview was a year and a half and millions of albums sold later, and it was for Coldplay's sophomore album, A Rush of Blood to the Head. I love that album even more than the first one. Unlike when the first album was released, I had no trouble getting an assignment to interview Coldplay. If anything, I had to fight to get a place as everyone was writing about them. This particular interview published in Venice Magazine. But before speaking to Chris, way ahead of the album's release, I spoke to the band's bass player, Guy Berryman, for a preview story for Virtually Alternative, which was a Radio Trade magazine. But I also ended up using the interview with Guy for Rolling Stone, and I got into a lot of trouble for it. You can still find that story on the magazine's site. I'll link it here, and I'll share my Virtually Alternative story to the Pictures of Lily newsletter. The interview with Chris was over the phone on August 8th, 2002, and I started out by asking him if he was gay because I had a dream that he was.
I mean, I'm exhausted now because I'm constantly dreaming like all night long, and then I wake up having no rest whatsoever. And with you, it was more like I was trying to be professional and all this, and you kept on saying you were gay, and I'm like, Chris, that's fine, you can be gay, we still need to do this interview.
Yeah, right.
But, yeah, you're not gay, are you?
No.
Do you think you might be?
Not really.
Okay. You know how some people don't know they are.
It crossed my mind when I was about 15, but then I started seeing girls.
Why did you think you were gay when you were 15?
Well, I mean, everyone wakes up one day and wonders what's going on with them, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess I do know what you mean. Because I had this one friend who I told him he was gay. He just kept on insisting he wasn't.
York.
Oh, yeah?
Fine.
Yeah,
everything. Doing lots of interviews.
Yeah, the usual.
What's this for, this one?
Well, it's supposed to be for a magazine called Venice.
Okay.
But I'm also supposed to be doing it for a magazine called Guitar One, except that's writing on a photo shoot.
Sure.
So I'm going to talk to Johnny, I think it is, after you, and that's more of like the guitar-y thing, but I might use some stuff from you.
All right, sure.
But, let's see, how old are you now?
25.
Okay. You're still pretty young, aren't you?
Well, you? Ish.
Ish. Do you feel a lot older now that you've had all these experiences?
No, not really.
Yeah.
Some days I feel really old. I feel old when I've started meeting people who are married and they're my age, and it, like, you ask someone out and they say, oh, I'd love to, but I'm married. It makes me feel a bit older, but then sometimes I feel really young, so...
That's so strange, to get married at so young.
Yeah. But it's cool, you know what I mean?
You think so?
Yeah.
That soon?
Well, if you meet the right person.
I just don't know that you know they're the right person when you're that young.
Yeah, but what makes you know they're the right person when you're 80?
Oh, you just know yourself better, that's why.
Maybe.
Not at 80, that's just too late, but I'm just saying, not that you can't get married at 80, but I hope that's not your first time.
Right.
You know, but, let's see, I've got like a million questions and they're all written in this like really circular way, so I don't know where to start.
Don't worry about it.
Okay. One of your songs makes me want to cry.
Cool.
Like Clocks. But
oh,
then,
really?
Yeah, it like in a good way though, like a happy crying.
Cool.
And then Daylight makes me want to laugh.
Oh, why is it that bad?
No, laugh in a really happy way.
Right.
But I was reading in the stuff that they sent us that you guys went up to Liverpool and you had like Ian McCulloch was there quite a lot and stuff.
Yeah.
And I think I can kind of hear that in the album.
Sure.
But do you think that? And also it was saying something about like you guys had actually been exposed to more music for this record, like more music outside of you. Do you think that that has an effect on how, like you end up sounding more like stuff that you heard? Because you didn't really sound like that before, you just kind of sounded like Coldplay. But maybe now you'll sound more like Echo and the Bunnymen or something.
I don't really agree with you, to be honest.
No, I'm asking you, I don't know if I think that.
Oh,
I'm just saying.
Because we've listened to so much music. I mean, the Bunnymen is just one of hundreds
mm-hmm.
of things that we've got really into. Everything from Kraftwerk to The Cure to Johnny Cash to Hank Williams to, you know, Eminem to Sparta to, you know, there's just tons. And we actually listened to much more for this record than we had done for the first one, you know.
Mm-hmm. But
I think if anything, it's probably less derivative.
Oh, I see what you mean. You mean like because on the first one you'd listen to less stuff, maybe you sounded like fewer things?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Well, we had, you know, fewer things to draw from, you know?
Right. Okay. But luckily you still end up sounding like you know?
Well, hopefully. I don't know. We really got into George Harrison as well on this record.
George Harrison on his own?
Yeah.
Yeah. What were you listening to growing up, though?
Well, I started cheesy like everyone when I was into A-ha and... well, Michael Jackson's not cheesy, but... I don't know, then things like, I suppose, The Doors. I went through a Doors phase and
mm-hmm.
some British bands like James and Cohen and things like that.
All right. So, like, a real combination, though.
Yeah.
I don't know, some of the stuff that I listen to that's supposed to be cheesy, like A-ha and stuff, I still listen to it now, and I'm like, you know, it still sounds completely perfect to me.
Well, it's great songs.
Yeah, like, I really like Hajagoogoo, and I still think they're completely perfect, and they're just such a joke.
Right.
But I'm like, no, they're perfect.
Right.
You know, the music sounds perfect to me, but, you know.
I know what you mean.
Yeah. But what do you attribute your American success to?
Fuck knows. I've got no melodic music, and...
Mm-hmm.
After that, we don't really have a clue what we're doing, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, we love selling records and, you know, doing well, but, you know, America's mad. The music industry is completely bonkers. You know, we wouldn't give ourselves credit for getting big, if you see what I mean, or not getting big. I mean, we're not that big. We're not at all big, really, in America. And, you know, I attribute it to some people at radio being quite brave.
Hmm. But do you
and
think you're
also people yeah. being cool, you know, people listening to music and liking us, you know?
Do you think you're bigger other parts of the world?
Definitely.
Okay. Is this the place where you're the smallest?
No.
Out of all the places you've been?
No, there's lots of places we're smaller.
Smaller than you are in America, you mean?
I mean, we're not really big anywhere, I suppose. Not really.
I don't know. Everybody knows who you are. I mean, they know you. This is what I noticed, right? I was standing on the street corner listening to these two guys talk, and I'm like, what are you guys talking about? And they're like, Coldplay. And I'm like, what about Coldplay? This is like a couple of months ago. And they said, we were saying how nobody knows what the names of the guys in the bands is. And I told them all your names without knowing that I knew the names.
Really?
Yeah, and I'm like, okay, I don't know why I know that, but that's interesting that you're saying that nobody knows the names of the people in the band.
Hi.
You know, because you're kind of like this weird big, where you're like big as an entity, maybe.
Yeah, right.
Or big as a sound, but maybe not
novelty.
Big as... What?
We're just a one-trick novelty. We'll
No, not that at all. It's more like your music is big, not
right.
your personality.
Well, that's cool.
No, it's a good thing, because, you know, Oasis have big personalities and not big music anymore.
Well, I take issue with that myself.
What do you mean?
Well, I don't agree with you.
Well, no, I mean, they're better known for their personalities than they are for their music. That's
well,
what I'm saying.
Well, maybe now, but there was a time when their music
totally.
Was amazing.
Totally. It's just that it kind of backfired when they got bigger than their music, that's all.
Right.
You know, which is a shame, because you should still just pay attention to the music. But do you think the environment's more open to bands that make music like you now? Since it was so hard before, and now it's gone back to kind of like the Vines and the Hives and stuff.
Well, I think bands like the Strokes and stuff are amazing, and the White Stripes.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're great. I don't know, I think in an ideal world, the music market would just be open for anything with melody and emotion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, unfortunately, it isn't always the way, but I think there's some amazing stuff around at the moment. And I don't know, I'm in a lucky position where I get to hear about all kinds of music. I mean, I don't know what it's like living in Nebraska and just having the local radio station. I don't know how easy it is to then find out about the White Stripes, you know?
Yeah, but it's just that when you guys first came around, there was nothing that sounded like you, really. I mean, there was the odd, you know, more melodic type stuff, but it wasn't that much, and it was really hard to get it to come through. And then you made it easier for other bands to come through, bands like Dubs or something.
Right. Well, maybe. I don't know. I mean, bands like Travis and mm-hmm. Radiohead made it easier for us, so, you know, everyone knows everyone.
Yeah, but I think, like, in the past, maybe they thought, oh, well, it's only Radiohead that's going to do anything for us. And then they're like, well, no, maybe if we give it a chance, you know, bands like Coldplay can kind of do the same thing for us as well. I'm talking about, like, record companies and stuff.
Yeah, maybe.
You know, putting maybe some effort cool. into it. Why don't you guys ever use your music for adverts or films?
Because it angers me how many people sell their music. Sell something they're supposed to be passionate about, and they're prepared to cheapen it. I just saw an advert with Usher on it, and it fucks me off, that.
Why?
Because your music is something you're supposed to... You're selling it to someone in a shop. You're selling your music as something that you're supposed to have been passionate about, and, you know, music can be so powerful and so emotional and can really change your life. And then to see the person you love or the music you love selling a car that they couldn't give a shit about, you know what I mean?
Mm.
It makes me angry. And, you know, you see the new Austin Powers film and it's full of product placement, and it's just, everybody seems to sell out, you know, and I think, I just really, really hope we never do adverts, because they just, the only thing we advertise is a thing called maketradefair.com, which is a website for what it says, you know, Make Trade Fair, but
I want to ask you about that, actually, but I'll ask about that in a minute. Because,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I do understand.
Samuel L. Jackson, he doesn't need to do adverts, but he does an advert for a bank, you know?
Hmm.
I don't understand why.
Yeah, but considering how difficult it is to get, you know, music that's not completely conventional played anywhere or heard anywhere, people just see it as another way of getting their stuff out.
I understand that, but I don't... I understand if... Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And
but you don't.
And I know that we did a thing with ABC.
I was going to say, you did that, yeah.
But that, to be fair to us, that wasn't really selling a product, and it wasn't really, well, we didn't really know what we were doing, to be honest.
Okay.
But it's just when it, I mean, you know, when it's the only outlet for your music, then I can understand. But when you have no need to do it, then it really angers me.
So do you think it's all right to do it in the beginning until you get some attention and then stop?
I don't know. I'm, you
know, no, seriously.
What I'm saying is that we have a policy of just not doing adverts.
Right. But you're not doing film soundtracks either?
Yeah, we do them. That's totally different.
Oh, okay, because that's what they said in there too, and I'm just like going, why? I'm like, I heard you on the Roswell soundtrack. That was
right.
A good thing. And it was a good show until, you know, the end when it got all strange. But... So about this, like, the trade thing, I did an interview with Damon Albarn not long ago about the thing that he did with Oxfam
sure.
as well, and he was just saying how he doesn't, like, he feels like people, you know, have their hearts in the right place, the people that they get to, like, come and endorse this stuff, but they don't really understand what it is that they're trying to help.
Right.
Why do you think they approached you, and do you feel like you understand what it is that you're trying to help?
Well, they approached us because we're a young band doing okay, you know, and,
mm-hmm.
you know, we're doing lots of interviews, and and whether I do I think we can help? I mean, I think our job is just to talk about the issue. It's not to give any specific solution or anything. It's just to raise awareness of something that we care about and that other people care about, you know?
Mm-hmm. But do you fully understand what it is you're trying to do?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Okay. I just want to make sure, because sometimes people just don't know what they're doing. They just show up.
Well, I mean...
Yeah.
I do know what I'm talking about.
Okay, good. So, tell me more about it, because I don't really know much about it.
Well, the issue, the bone of contention around, you know, the one of the three principal causes of poverty in the world is unfair trade. You know, either exploitation by big companies who have, you know, factories in very poor countries and don't pay very much money to their workforce, but also on another level of the trade laws around the world, which, you know, enforce open markets on countries, and, you know, so they can't charge import tariffs, and basically there's just a gross imbalance between people who are wanting to trade in the first world and people who are wanting to trade in the third world, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Someone over here manufacturing stuff will probably be able to sell it and will probably make a profit and, you know, will not be fucked over by tariffs or cheap imports coming in. Whereas, say, in a country like Haiti, where I went for about in February for a trip, you know, over there, rice farmers and coffee farmers can't really do anything because they're flooded with cheap imports, which comes from American surplus rice, or they can't sell their product at a profitable price because, you know, big coffee companies, you know, Nestle and all them, they just strangle them and won't pay a fair price, you know.
Mm.
So that's what the issue is. It's just like, well, you know, trade is a good thing and mm-hmm. the world market is a good thing, but it just needs to be a little more fair.
And what is it exactly that you're doing?
Well, I'm just
talking about it. Yeah. Well, that
what
helps.
What I'm saying is look at maketradefair.com. You know, I'm not an authority on it, but
right.
I know that I believe in it.
Okay.
Of course, I mean, it's fucking obvious.
Yeah.
If I have £2, if I have $2 and you have something that costs $2, then I should give you the $2, you know?
Yeah.
And you should give me the thing, and that's trade.
Yeah.
But if I said, no, I'm just going to give you 5 cents and you had to give it to me, then that wouldn't be fair.
Mm-mm. That makes sense. I was looking on your website yesterday and I noticed you do like an e-zine, which I've never seen anybody else do, and it looks fucking great.
Right.
And it's a nice little thing for people to keep, isn't it, like a collectible thing?
Right.
But who came up with that idea? What's in it usually?
I've no idea what's in it, to be
honest. Okay. Is it somebody else that just does it for
me.
You guys?
I think Will, our drummer, has something to do with it.
Okay.
And our manager as well.
Yeah, but that's a good way. I mean, if you wanted to like get some message across to people, would you would probably put it in there, wouldn't you? You personally,
well,
I mean.
We have links on our website to things that we care about, and mm-hmm. also in our record sleeve, there's a whole bunch of websites.
Oh, right. Okay. I don't have the sleeve yet. I just have the advance. How do you feel about this record?
I hate being asked that question, not because...
Sorry.
No, I don't mean like that. I mean,
uh-huh.
It's like trying to analyze your own nose.
Okay.
You know? I really don't know. I might think it's brilliant and you might not, you know. We see it from different angles, but I know, you know, I mean, it was the same on the first record. I was totally, utterly obsessed with it for 2 years,
mm-hmm.
and now it's finished and I don't really know what we're supposed to think of it.
Right.
I know that it's the thing that we thought about every day, all day, for years,
mm-hmm.
for 2 years, and then when it's done and you have to start talking about it, you're not quite sure what to say because you feel slightly nerdy saying, well, you know, all I thought about for 2 weeks was the
2 years.
Drum sound on this
song.
Oh,
right, 2 weeks. But it sounds like you worked really hard on it. You know, like, that comes across just listening to the record. It wasn't something that it doesn't sound like you just knocked it out, you know?
No.
Because I did an interview with, I think it was Guy, like, a few months ago, and you guys were still in the middle of doing it. And, you know, you could just hear it in his voice, just like, you know, we're trying to, like, just make this what it's supposed to be.
Right.
But we don't know what that is yet. We just know it's not there yet.
Right.
Going, you know, it really sounds like they worked hard. It doesn't sound like it was, like you're just trying to, like, follow up the first one, which is as soon as possible at all, which is great, you know, which obviously comes to, like, the next very usual thing is, like, the pressure that was on you.
Right.
And it's like, I usually don't ask people that because I'm like, well, the first one wasn't that great to begin with.
Yeah.
But with this one, I'm like, oh, I know there was pressure because I know that we probably didn't expect it to do as well as it did. And now it's just like, okay, now what are you going to come out with?
Well, the pressure really comes from us, you know.
Yeah, of course. But were you writing it like while you were touring before?
Yeah.
And then did you use those same songs or was...
We used some of them and then some others that came out in the studio.
Right.
Well, I don't really know where our songs come from. It amazes me when we get a good song and I can't believe it, you know, and there's loads of rubbish ones that you'll never ever hear.
No, loads of rubbish Coldplay songs.
Yeah, or even worse, depending on your viewpoint.
How do you think, how do you compare this one to the first one, or can you not do that yet?
I don't know. Some people will hate it, and some people won't. I'm not sure.
But what do you, I mean, see, because whenever I ask you that, you keep saying what people will think, but I'm asking what you think.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. I find it difficult to say.
To say what?
Well, to say what I think of it, because I don't really know anymore. I know it a bit too well.
Right. But
it's
that
like,
doesn't...
You know, even the mother of a mass murderer still loves him.
Okay. Comparing to the record to a mass murderer, are you?
Well, in a way.
Okay. Do the comparisons you get in the media, like, stick in your head when you're trying to write a song, though?
The what in the media?
The comparisons you get to other people.
No, not really.
Because sometimes I wonder, there's like, you know, they're going to say this sounds like so-and-so, I should change it a little bit, maybe.
Oh, maybe. Sometimes it's a good thing, because you have a song that sounds blatantly like you're trying to rip off, I don't know, Pearl Jam, and then you think, well, maybe we should not use that, because it does sound a little bit too like them. Or,
right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, of course. Do you expect this record to do as well?
No.
You don't expect it to do as well, or you don't know?
I don't think it will do as well, no.
Why do you think that?
Just the way it's going.
So far?
Yeah.
Nothing's happened yet.
I don't know, you're talking to me on a very miserable day, so
I'm sorry, why is it miserable?
I don't know. I don't think it'll do very well at all.
Okay. But, because you've already sold out everything here. Somebody told me the tickets are going for their smaller show here for like $325 on eBay. For a pair. Because I asked for a plus one, and then I called Ambrosia. I'm like, you know what, never mind.
Really?
I feel really guilty. Just give me one.
Well, don't worry about it.
I know. I'm like, I don't want to. That sounds like asking too much. But the Greek Theatre is going to be good because that's a beautiful place.
Yeah.
And it's outdoors and it's just gorgeous.
Yeah, we're looking forward to that.
Yeah. But I got to ask you some stuff that I might have to use for like the guitar thing.
Sure.
Like basically your guitars, your amps, the effects you use, stuff like that, you know, like technical boring things. So just name them off for me.
Well, I started using these new small Martin acoustics, which are great. I can't even remember the model, but they're kind of dark brown and really small.
Mm-hmm.
And they're electronic acoustics and I really like them. And then I use me and Johnny both use Fender DeVille amps, which are brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
And I play a Fender Telecaster and a Gibson 345, ES-345, and a Rickenbacker 12 string.
Okay.
And that's my guitars.
And what about the effects?
I just use a delay, a Boss delay pedal, and the DeVille overdrive, just the basic amp one, and that's it.
And then I noticed that it was saying that you guys ended up using more computer involvement.
A bit, yeah.
Tell me a little bit more about that. Because the songs just basically start with you, right?
Sort of, yeah.
Okay, what do you mean sort of? They don't?
Well, as in, yeah, but then they don't become proper Coldplay songs until...
Everyone else gets involved.
Yeah, because sometimes it's Johnny's melody that makes it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's... We kind of record backwards in that often we record the guitars and the vocals first and then put the drums on last.
Okay.
And we use Pro Tools, which is really cool to do that with because it means you can chop songs around and, you know, you don't have to start with the drums and it's a good way of doing it.
Okay. And then, because I know, I mean, I don't know if you're like that computer savvy or what, but... Is it the person that's like doing the engineering and the production that comes up with more of what you should be doing as far as enhancing it? Or is it more like you're thinking, you know, it would be really good if we could make this do this here? Oh, and they do it for you.
We're in control of that, yeah.
Okay. So what does the producer do then?
Well, we do all that together, you know.
With the producer?
Well, Ken is our co-producer. We just work together.
Okay.
So, you know, if I have an idea and he doesn't think it's very good,
okay,
I don't do it, and vice versa.
Okay.
If anyone has an idea, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, of course.
But Ken is the master of making sure that we keep the emotion of the song intact and don't ruin that.
Right.
And Mark, a guy called Mark, does all the Pro Tour stuff, and he's brilliant at, you know, chopping things around.
Right. But you're the one that's telling him what you want done.
Well, we don't leave the room and let someone else do it. We're involved in every note, really.
And then, as far as like the guitar stuff goes, because you and Johnny are the one that are doing it.
Yeah.
Do you have like a different kind of relationship with him as far as working goes?
With Johnny?
Yeah.
How do you mean?
Like, as far as like the songwriting process.
Do I have a different relationship with him
versus the other guys in the band?
Oh no.
Okay, is it? It's all kind
well,
of.
Well, a little. I mean, because we tend to be. I mean, not really. I mean, sometimes we just sit and play as the two of us, and that doesn't really happen with anyone else. But really, we need all four of us to do anything really good.
Right. Tell me something about the other guys. Something about each of the other ones. About each guy.
Will is the benchmark. You know, if he likes a song, then it probably means that it's not that bad.
Right.
And if you can get Will and Guy to agree, then you can keep a song, because it's normally one of them that doesn't like something that me and Johnny have done.
Okay.
So they're very good at. They've got great taste, I think. And when they agree on something, then it's a happy occasion for us.
Hmm. Well, that's good. But tell me something about Johnny now.
Well, he's mega, you know?
Yeah, that really says it all, doesn't it?
Yeah.
How did you come about working with that Fault Line person?
He just asked me, and I was free, and I did it.
Is it somebody you knew from before, or was it just...
Yeah, we met him when we were meeting producers for our first record.
Oh, okay. Okay, but he wasn't like this great friend or anything. It was just not really a random...
He's a really nice guy. Really talented guy.
I like the one you did on his album probably the best. I don't know if I like the whole thing.
I don't really know the album. I like what he does.
Yeah.
I don't like what I did on it, to be honest.
Why?
I just didn't think it was... I thought I did two songs with him. One of them was good and one of them wasn't.
Right. All right.
I take responsibility for, because I should have made it better.
Were you not in the right frame of mind?
Yeah.
As far as like the title of the album goes, is that reflecting your mindset?
Yeah, well, let me just say about Faultline, but there's a song on there with Wayne Coyne from the Flaming Lips, which is amazing, I think.
You think that's way better than what you did?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Well, the album title, A Rush of Blood to the Head, that's a phrase in Britain which means...
No, I know what it means, but does that reflect your mindset?
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely.
While you were making it or now?
Absolutely, both.
Good.
My grandfather always told me to do things now, you know, rather than put them off till tomorrow, and that's what it's about.
Cool. Thanks, Chris. I'm done, you know.
Oh, cool.
I want to see you in, 2 weeks?
Okay. Okay. Lovely to talk to you.
All right. Thank you.
Bye.
Listening back to this interview, Chris sounds a little argumentative, but I feel like he was not quite understanding my questions and being just a bit defensive. But as he says, I caught him on not a good day. Still, Clocks was my ringtone for at least a couple of years. After the album's release, I spoke to the group's guitarist, Johnny Buckland, for Guitar One. So basically, I spoke to all but one member of the band for this album for 4 different articles. I'll share all those articles to the Pictures of Lily newsletter. The Pictures of Lily newsletter goes out every couple of weeks, and you can subscribe to it for free. For my paid subscribers, I am posting bonus newsletters that include print-only interviews from my 34-year archive, including classic ones from the 90s with a cross-section of people from The Cure to Oasis, Blur, The Verve, Portishead, Daft Punk, Lily Allen, and more to come. For founding members, there are additional interviews with Noel Gallagher, Damon Albarn, Richard Ashcroft, and more Daft Punk. I will link the Pictures of Lily newsletter in this podcast if you'd like to subscribe to it for free. Any paid subscriptions to the Pictures of Lily newsletter go straight to supporting the production of this always free podcast. From myself and my co-producer and editor, Lawrence Schroeder, thanks for listening. And if you have a chance to subscribe or follow the podcast on any of the podcast platforms, please do so, and please rate and review. You can connect to us on picturesoflily.com, and from there you can choose your preferred podcast platform, or Instagram, or Facebook, or YouTube, or Pandora, or Amazon. You can also find the playlist for the podcast episodes on Spotify and YouTube. Thanks for listening. Pictures of Lily.